1, 2, 3, Tucson, good morning. That kicks off our Tuesday edition of the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice with me, your host, Zach Yenser. Welcome to the show. As every day, Monday through Friday, 10 to 12, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting us to that future. One of the things, and I try to say this at least once a week, that drives this show for me, and I hope it drives the engagement that you and I get to have on our live line in this live feedback community conversation we get to have every day on the show, is that I really believe Tucson is at a tipping point moment, and the decisions that we make in the next 5 to 10 years will impact our next 50. It's not our first tipping point moment. It won't be our last, but we're in that critical moment in time where we've got a certain kind of momentum, certain kinds of collaborations, certain kind of conversations going that, depending on how all those things go, it will really dictate the next 50 years. And so the whole goal of this show is to have those conversations, to talk about those issues and themes, and to engage in real live time together as a community. 790-2040 is your avenue for doing that. If you have a question or a thought or want to engage with me or our guests this show about anything, to kick us off, let me give you what we're going to talk about today, and then we'll get into it. We have Tucson Department of Transportation Director Diana Alarcon here in studio for the next few minutes to talk about her role in the city in transportation, complete streets, and just what she brings from her past experience to Tucson. I'm excited about this conversation. Then we'll get into Wallet Hub lists Tucson as one of 2019's best big cities to live in. I'll give you some of my thoughts on that. Forbes talks about Tucson as an underdeveloped market that could become a tech hub, and three key themes that will drive cities' strategies for job creation. We talk about big ideas every Tuesday here on the show. There's three big ones. I'll give you my commentary. You call in, give me your big idea for Tucson's greatest opportunities and challenges, and that will take us to the 12 o'clock hour, 790-2040. Diana Alarcon, welcome to the studio. So excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here too.
So I was trying to think how long you've been in the role. Can you let us know how long you've been here in Tucson and where you came from and some of your experience?
Sure.
And let's, as we were joking, let's introduce you to the five people now who don't know who you are.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this opportunity. I actually joined the city of Tucson back in mid-October. From the city of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I had prior been with the city for over 15 years, and the past 8 years with the city, I was in the capacity of the Director of Transportation and Mobility. Love that opportunity. Found that I became very quickly a transportation junkie, I like to call myself. Just wanted to learn everything I could about transportation. Always had my feet dabbling in it, because I came up through the ranks of parking and into transportation. But parking has always been one of the elements of what we refer to as a transportation demand management system. So I've always been experienced with it, always been dabbling in transportation. But then I had this great opportunity to really talk about transportation and put it at the forefront for the city of Fort Lauderdale. And I've enjoyed it. And what was so great about the opportunity of coming to Tucson, I'm a big HGTV fan. I love to, drives my husband crazy, but
Home and Garden TV.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And I drive my husband crazy because I'll get a project and I'll break something down to the bare bones and then rebuild it. And, of course that always takes time, but when I actually was, interviewing for opportunities to continue my, professional growth, what I found in Tucson were some great bones. So as you mentioned earlier, the city's actually been looked at and is being considered as some really good opportunities. Well, I saw those opportunities and it was very exciting for me. So you're exactly right. We're at a tipping point and this is a great time to be having the opportunity about how we're going to shape and mold the city for the next 50 years. And we should really start the planning now and then every year move it forward and revise it as we do the development, as in things improve, as we have these capital projects come to life. Mm-hmm. So it's really exciting to actually be part of the growth. And that's exciting for me here in Tucson.
That is exciting, and welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're really, really glad you're here. I was joking with Diana that I say good things about her behind her back and not just in studio when she's here, because I really appreciate her work. So Fort Lauderdale is just shy of a couple hundred thousand people within city limits, or...
Exactly. We're actually, the population was around 187,000. Okay. It was the largest municipality within Broward County. So if you're looking and doing a comparable to Tucson, Fort Lauderdale itself was we always refer to as the epic center for Broward County. It was the downtown for the Broward County as a whole. On any given day, our population growth went above $500,000 Monday through Friday, just because of the amount of businesses that came into the downtown area. And then we also had, you know, the port. So it's a very strong tourist area as well. So people would always say we have seasons, but in Fort Lauderdale, we never had seasons. Pretty much like here, we do have a season in the wintertime with the snowbirds, but we didn't really have that in Fort Lauderdale because Monday through Friday, we had an influx of people coming in for business reasons. We also had the tourists because we had a major airport, as well as we also had a seaport, and our beaches were a huge attraction year-round, no matter what time of the year it was. So I would have to say on most given days, our population was anywhere between $500,000 to about 700,000.
Gotcha. So in either way, in either count, just shy or in some cases very shy of even Tucson's current mm-hmm. population or growth. Yet at the same time, and correct me if I'm wrong, just as I was following along with your kind of, you know, interview and you got to present to the public during your interview process.
Correct.
It sounded like Fort Lauderdale, in some ways, their transportation system under your guidance was a little bit further ahead even in some regards, or had kind of more progressive thoughts on transportation than Tucson, even though Tucson is in some counts substantially bigger. Is that a fair assessment in your mind? And I'm just kind of trying to get from you kind of maybe the compare and contrast between mm-hmm. Fort Lauderdale and Tucson to get a sense of where Tucson is at in your mind and where it can go.
So actually, I find Tucson to be ahead of Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
And I'll share with you, you know, what was really exciting for us is we were just installing our first hawk in the city of Fort Lauderdale just before I actually came out and joined the team here in Tucson. So it was really, we were so super excited about putting a hawk in, and then I come here and actually this is the founding home of the hawk. So, and that is such a great safety practice that allows the pedestrian to have a priority in what we all consider a car-centric community. And we're all a car-centric community because that's our means of transportation. So one of the things that I feel we have to start talking about as a community is really understanding what we want that balanced transportation system to be. And I do feel Tucson is actually very far ahead of Fort Lauderdale in that sense, because we do have the first link of the SunLink. You have the first 4-mile loop, and that's the beginning. And we need to continue to have that conversation about what that looks like. But that's the first loop of a mass transportation system that we can consider here in the city. And we need to talk about how that can look and feel and expand. And then you have a great bicycle network. Some of it is safe, some of it isn't. So we need to talk about how we expand that and use that. And there's so many different types of bicycle riders. We need to be considering all of those riders and how we can build that safe environment. And then the pedestrian experience. I mean, I always tell folks every time I have an opportunity to talk, we all start on our feet. You walk out your door, you get in your car, you drive somewhere, but you get out of your car and you walk to your destination. Your car's not taking you to the destination, your feet are. So how does the city need to look and feel for when you are on your feet? And then, you know, the car is also important. It plays a very important role in all of our lives. It's given, you know, the American society as a whole this great sense of independence and ability to move. I mean, it's exciting to be able to put your kids in a car and take them to see parts of the world, of the United States that you probably couldn't, you know, even consider 50 years ago. And that's really exciting. There's not a better education than be able to take your kids to look and feel. And those are opportunities that a vehicle gives you. But again, it's about building that balance and how is that going to look and feel? And I'm really looking forward to that conversation with the community over the next year through our mobility master plan process of talking about what that balanced transportation system can be to move us forward and also to get us in the rights to give us the footsteps or roadmap, and every pun is intended with that, of moving forward for the next 50 years. So what is our roadmap to get to that 50 years to build that balanced transportation system for the city as a whole?
You know, there's a couple questions for you that come to mind from that. I'd be curious to get your thoughts on how you view complete streets. Complete streets is something, and capital C, capital S, a formal complete streets, is something that, if I get the timeline right, Living Streets Alliance had been working with mayor and council on, and it was right about wrapped up in terms of that becoming an ordinance as you were stepping into your position. But in Fort Lauderdale, you had experience with at least the essence of complete streets. And I'll hear, you know, those who maybe are on foot or are on bike concerned about Tucson's car centricness and how design is based around that. And then I'll hear folks, and like myself in many ways, that do a lot of driving in car, not always by choice, but that's the way it is. And not that I have these concerns, but I'll hear concerns of, well, you know, complete streets is going to make it harder, you know, for cars to drive. And we're already a slow city in terms of at least the feel is of our mile per hour on a freeway, highway, or a street. So when you talk about that balance, what's your idea of complete streets that creates that balance of multimodal and car?
So I think people get complete streets a little confused. So I think it's important to understand what complete street actually asks you to do is to evaluate the modes that you're putting on the street. And making sure that whatever mode you put on the street, whether it's pedestrian, bicycle, vehicular, transit, freight, moving goods, whatever that mode that you're going to put on that street, that you're designing it for that mode to move safely. That does not mean every street has every mode. And I think that's where people get a bit confused, because they think when we talk complete street, every mode's going to show on every street. And that's not really necessarily the case. That's where the Mobility Master Plan will play a very important role. The Mobility Master Plan will be the framework of what we're going to put on the streets. Complete street will be the design that we will use so that those modes are safe. So as we go through as a community and put together our balanced transportation system, they'll be deciding what modes they want to put on a street. And realistically, because we have a certain amount of right-of-way, You really can't put every mode. So we'll have to ask the community to prioritize the modes. So it may be, for example, on Grant Avenue, it's Grant Street, sorry, not Avenue, on Grant Street, still learning my street and avenues. The mountains mess me up, north, south, east, west. Everybody goes, well, that Catalina Mountain's to the north and this mountain's, and I'm like, folks, I'm from Florida. We have nothing but flat land. Every mountain looks the same to me, and it's exciting, and I love looking at the mountains. But on Grant, let's just say Grant Street, and I'm not saying this because, again, this is part of the community discussion we're going to have over the next year, but let's just say Grant Street is a street that the community decides they want to prioritize for vehicular traffic. Well, our job then is to look at and say, how do we make it safe so that the cars can move efficiently and effectively in a safe manner, and to get from point A to point B in a reasonable amount of time? And then that's our challenge. So our job would be in the designing and then in the movement, using complete street lens to actually design and engineer it so that we give that to the community. Then the second priority the community may decide for Grant Street is actually transit. So we'll prioritize the car first, build those modes, build that mode so it's safe, and then we'll look at the transit side of the house and say, how does that work? And then we'll build that to the complete street lens, through the complete street lens, so that that is a safe mode. So complete street isn't necessarily about every mode being on every street. Mm-hmm. It's about whatever modes the community as a whole decides, that you're building it in the safe way for that mode to move, so that you're reducing the ability for conflicts and crashes to occur. Because remember, our number one goal is safety in transportation, and we want to get to where we have zero number of crashes occurring on a road. And we do that through using complete street designs.
Gotcha.
And designing those through that lens so that every mode that we put on that road is safe. And as a community, we're going to have those hard conversations they're not hard, but we have to have those realistic conversations about what modes we want on it, because we can't say no road's going to be designed for cars, because that's unrealistic, because we are right now, because we do not have a mass transportation system. We have to design for cars to move and for cars to move safely. And we also have to have the conversation about which roadway is going to give the opportunity for those cars to move exponentially north and south or east and west.
Right.
Because we have no freeway system in the city, and we have no loop. We only have I-10 as your main freeway highway through, you know, to move, but we still have traffic that needs to move east-west, and we have traffic that needs to move north-south. So we need to identify that. And there's different things that we can apply, not only through the engineering of Complete Street, but through some of our technology opportunities. So one of the things that we're looking at right now is adaptive signalization.
I was going to ask you about this,
So, and for those folks who do not know what adaptive signalization, that's where we're actually looking at the opportunities real-time information to move cars. So that would be putting a camera detection, installing software, putting new signals up, and having them communicate with each other. So based on the number of cars sitting at the intersection at any one time, the software would flip the lights instead of it being on a certain cycle time right
now. Super. You know how many, I was having this conversation with a friend yesterday, how many times people have on the back of a napkin in Tucson restaurants during happy hour have brainstormed, hey, we're engineers, we can, what's taking Tucson so long to get adaptive? Because, and debunk this number, I want to make sure that I'm not throwing the wrong number around, but I've heard that Tucson is unique in that it's 75-25, 75% of its commuter traffic happens on signaled roadways, and 25% happens on what highway freeway system that we have. Most other communities are 50-50. This is what I've heard. I don't know if that's been true in your experience, but when we talk about safety, when we talk about adaptive signaling, when we talk about speed of traffic, in Tucson, I feel like that means talking about that 75% of our commuter traffic happens within the city on surface streets. How does that play into, if you buy that, buy or sell, Diane Alarcon, Department of Transportation Director here in Tucson. How does that play into your day-to-day design and conversations around moving traffic and transit around Tucson in the best, fastest, and most safe ways?
So that's the first time I've heard the 75-25, but I would probably say it's in that field because we do not have any major north-south, east-west highway.
We've had many opportunities to do that. This is before either of our time, so we can talk about it freely.
Yes, and I go back and read a lot of the past information and past decisions that were made. So we do have to think about, it's much harder now to go back and try to put a highway in.
It really is.
But there are some opportunities, so we should be looking at that and including that in the conversation, especially when we're talking about the mobility master plan. You know, it's very interesting because there is a lot of conversation right now about autonomous cars, and that's supposed to be the wave of the future. And the reality is autonomous cars are, they're going to be the future, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to move as a society away from where we're all going to give up our car.
Mm-hmm.
That just means we're all going to move to autonomous cars. And we do hope somewhere along the way that some of the conversation will move people away from not everybody owning their own car, but maybe where there is shared autonomous cars. So it's all based on, like just now with using Uber and Lyft, where you have an app and you order the car and the car comes to you. So in Florida, to kind of give an example of this, in Florida, you can actually, you know, we're on the ocean. There's so many waterways. I mean, you know, there was over 300 miles of waterway through the city of Fort Lauderdale. That's a lot of waterway. And we used to, down there, they would always say the best day for someone is the day they buy the boat, and the next best day is the day they sell their boat. Because the cost to maintain and care and even use it and upkeep is astronomical in South Florida. Well, it's just costly to begin with. And a car is very expensive. It costs, you know, the average expense of a car, when you include the car, insurance, maintenance, and everything, the average household for one vehicle is spending close to about $15,000. If we could come up with what they did in Florida with boats, is so instead of having to buy a boat, I could buy a program. And that allowed me to have a certain amount of time. So I pay into the program on a monthly basis, and I actually can go use a boat for one day out of the month. Mm-hmm. And only thing I'm putting in it is gas. And that would cover, it was like a membership. Right. And so I had the boat for one full day. I had all the insurance covered. It included all the equipment on the boat that I needed. The only thing I paid for was the gas that I would put in the boat to actually take it out. So they're looking at the autonomous vehicle in the same capacity where it's a membership.
Right.
So you don't have to own a car, but you're going to buy into a membership.
Right.
And then you'll be able to program to use that car a certain time. That car will come and pick you up and take you up and deliver you, then come back and pick you up. But what it'll do is it'll also stage other rides in between, so that instead of your car sitting 8 hours a day while you're at work, it's actually working itself. And so that will be less trips, because they are feeling like in the future, when they put this program together and we get to this place, one vehicle could actually be handling close to 6 to 7 trips on any given day. So that's 6 or 7 less cars that are going to be on the road, because you have just that one.
Right.
So that's the conversation that people are having. It took 25 years to get into the marketplace. It's going to take 25 years for us to get there. But let's go back to adaptive signalization, because that's the first step to getting to autonomous cars. To get to adaptive signalization, you have to have communication from one signal to another. And the autonomous cars will run off of that communication as well. So that requires us putting that communication in. Most American cities are not building that infrastructure today. So we got to get that infrastructure built before we even start the 25-year count. And we're not there yet. So I can tell you, as a city, as we're moving forward and we're putting projects in the ground, we're putting that communication as part of our project in play.
Great.
But my goodness, we have, I can't even remember off the top of my head right now how many miles of roadways that we have within the city of Tucson that we need to do that to kick in adaptive signalization. So there's many different types of forms of communication. We're actually getting ready to test some wireless communication on some adaptive signalization, and hopefully we'll have success with that. We're really looking forward to it. If it is successful, then that's one of the strategies we can use to move forward with creating adaptive signalization. We're going to be testing, we've partnered with the University of Arizona, and we're going to be testing this year. We're going to actually be testing a loop of all of 23 traffic signals that are all tied to each other that will be running on a queuing theory.
Exciting.
Based on real time. We're going to be doing that this year. We're going to be doing it with different forms of software and hardware to see what is the best mechanism out there to consider as a city moving forward. But that is one of my initiatives that I have. Well, actually, I shouldn't say it's mine. I got here in City Act. The staff already has been doing all of this. They've been looking at it. They were just waiting for someone to say, okay, let's go play with this. And so I was just able to say, okay, this is great. Let's go put it into action.
So cool.
I want to see what's happening. So I really can't take credit for that. I can just say I gave them the permission, but they have been just, you know, itching to do it. So you have a really smart, innovative staff here that have great ideas about how we can improve the movement of traffic and the flow of traffic. You have a great resource at the University of Arizona that we've partnered up to look at that and the evaluation of it so that we can move those initiatives forward. And I'm really excited about what the next 12 months is going to bring us here at the city with all of this new technology and opportunity we're going to be testing. And I'm looking forward to then taking it to the next level after that.
That's incredible. You know, that takes us to about time. I checked in with your staff the other day, and I said, does Diana Alarcon, Tucson Director of Transportation, have any margin if we were to go over it? Nope, we factor it in. She's a busy lady, so I want to honor that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But this was an
interview. And I was afraid we wouldn't have enough to talk about.
And I told you we'd get to the end and go, it was not a problem.
Exactly.
No, this is exciting. I wanted to just hear from you and get a broad overview. I certainly hope this is the first of many conversations where we can do deep dives into Tucson's transportation. There's so much to talk about. There's no other topic that lights up these phone lines like a Christmas tree more than transportation. It's pretty incredible. And so I hope to have you on. But just thank you for the energy that you're bringing.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
I often say on the show, as a city, we have to have one foot in the pothole and one foot on the moon. at the same time on the same day, that we have to have these moonshot, what does the city look like in 2055, while making sure that we can drive well today. And I genuinely feel like you bring that energy and vision. And so
thank you.
I'm excited about it. And I was going to ask you about streetcar, was going to ask you about a couple other things. We're simply out of time, Tucson, here with Diana Alarcon, but we got through a lot. And I was going to ask you about the future of the city, and you started talking about the communications needed and so good things. Real quick, one thing in the next 12 months that you're really excited about, what's something you want to get us excited about as we head off?
I'm really excited about the Mobility Master Plan. We're going to be doing a lot of community outreach. Want to have a lot of conversation with as many people as possible about how they envision the city over the next 25 to 30 years. And what that development needs to look and feel like, and understanding the constraints and the opportunities. And I'm really looking forward to having that conversation with the community as a whole. So we'll be knocking on people's doors. We'll actually be attending a lot of our homeowner association meetings and are out there. We will be trying to find as many outlets as possible to have the conversation and talk about what we want the future to be, and understanding that what we do today is actually 30 years down the road. So
yes,
how do you want that? So growth is going to happen, but we can do it smart.
Yes.
So let's have the conversation as a community. Let's talk about what that smart growth is going to look like from the transportation perspective. And then let's find the ways to meet those compromises, but also be realistic about what the future is going to be like and feel, and those opportunities, and take advantage of them. So I'm really excited about that Mobility Master Plan conversation, because that's going to give everybody a really good idea about what the next steps need to be, and how we're going to plan for it, how we're going to actually fund it, and then how we're going to go build it.
If anybody listening has a question or concern for your department, what's the best contact point?
There is we actually started a TDOT Concern.
Okay.
Which is a great way to get in touch with us. You can actually do it by email. It's tdotconcerns@tucsonaz.gov. And so it's TDOT Concerns with an S @tucsonaz.gov.
Perfect.
That is the best way. We actually, it goes into our what we call Cartograph system, and it's just a task order system that we actually can... it's a task order system, and then we track it. So any potholes that people see, please send it to us. Let us know. We're asking the community, be our eyes and ears out there. Let us know. We do not see everything. People think we do, and we do not. But once we know about it, then we can actually put a plan together and go out and get it fixed.
Love it.
Oops, I lost it. I'm sorry. Erica is here with me, and she's giving me a phone number too. So we also have a phone number for TDOT Concern as
Super.
Well that people can call into, and that is 520-791-3154. And then call that number, and once again, they'll actually get our customer service folks, great folks, love to talk to everybody, and they'll get that into the system as well. And so we'll go look at everything, and if it's something we can do, we'll actually get out and repair it, and we'll let you know. If it's something that takes a little bit more work, because we do have some standards and rules that we have to follow, but I am always challenging staff to get creative and get outside their box. But we'll actually go out and we'll find ways to get it, rectify it, or correct it. So we're all about getting things fixed and better. We want to improve the quality of life of everybody. And this is just a way for the community to help us do it quicker, better, and faster.
Diana Alarcon, Tucson's Director of Transportation, thank you for your time this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you for allowing me to sit with you and visit.
Of course.
I enjoyed it.
This was great. More to come. Tucson, that wraps up our conversation with Diana Alarcon, Tucson's Director of Transportation. When we come back, we'll get into the rest of our show today. Tucson, ranked by Wallet Hub as one of Tucson's best big cities to live in 2019. We'll get into that on the other side of the break. 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being with us. We do our best to provide quality news and talk, and you bring the trust and local listening, and that is a partnership worth doing, worth having, and worth working for every day here on the show. Well, we just said goodbye to Diana Alarcon, Tucson's Director of Transportation. And just to give you guys a little bit of context, and I'm excited to share what comes next the next time Diana and I sit in studio together, and she definitely wants to, and I'm excited about it. The first time on my show with most guests, I try to get kind of just a broad intro, a broad overview, a 30,000-foot look at the issues and themes and ideas at work in the city. There's so many things that we could dive into specifically, and that is where we're going next. And so right during the break, Diana suggested that the next time that she comes on that I do a social media push to figure out from you, and we'll do it on the phone lines as well, what is a transportation issue in Tucson that you most want to know about or talk about in terms of the city of Tucson? And then we'll spend the entire 30 or 40 minutes interview the next time with Diana Alarcon, Tucson's Department of Transportation Director, just going into that and taking your calls. And so the one thing that she's really excited about doing is having a back and forth conversation on key transportation issues with our listening Tucson audience. And I say Tucson because it's the city of Tucson Department of Transportation. We do talk regional. We do talk Southern Arizona. But in this case, it would be city of Tucson related, whether you're commuting in from another part of the city or you live in the city. I just wanted to give you guys a quick forecast that is where we are going. So if you were sitting there wondering, hey, I wanted to hear about this or that or talk about this or that, or maybe you called in right at the end of our conversation, we were on a tight timeline, wanted to do a general introduction, and then we'll do a deep dive into more policy and more issues in the interviews ahead. So I hope that was a really good kind of look into Diana Alarcon's head on this show. Really excited about her energy and vision. And she said something interesting that I think validates you and I as the community here, Tucson. And that is the decisions we make today, especially regarding transportation, even though we talk about past fumbles or present challenges, right? The transportation is built around what does the city look like in 2050? And you heard that from Diana Alarcon quite plainly, that everything is built around the 20-30-40-year plan. And we certainly need to be thinking in that direction here in the city. So feel free to give a call in if there's a question or an issue you want to talk about. I can catalog that for my next conversation. But I wanted to get into this ranking that came out today in Wallet Hub called 2019's Best Big Cities to Live In. And I want to break out a few important thoughts there and take your thoughts as well. This is our What If hour of the show, where we talk about big ideas for some of Tucson's big opportunities and challenges. And there were some interesting things about this this publication by Wallet Hub that I wanted to get into. But let's get to our phone lines real fast, take your calls, and then we'll get into Wallet Hub. Let's see, I think we have, is it Chuck on line two? Chuck, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Well, Zach, you keep mentioning where the city of Tucson's at a tipping point. I really think we got a tipping point coming up very soon here with the certification of the sanctuary city ballot measure. And it's already been certified. It's going to be on the ballot. So
yep.
We're going to be the first in the nation to vote on this. Zach, if this thing passes, the perception of Tucson is going to go right down the drain. People are thinking, oh, Tucson. They're just a sanctuary city of protecting criminals and rapists and murderers and all that kind of stuff. And I just hope, and I'm hoping and praying, Zach, that this thing goes down and flames, because I don't want it. I don't even want to live here and be part of it.
Mm.
Thank you, Zach.
Chuck, thank you for your call. It's a timely call. I hope you're still listening there. I'm actually looking forward to, because of this very reason, because it's a prevalent moment. I don't have people on this show that I agree, that I only agree with, right? That's boring to me, that's boring radio. I want this to be a place where people's ideas get to be heard and talked about. So in that vein, and to Chuck's call, to the point of Chuck's call, I just booked yesterday the director of PDI, People's Defense Initiative, to come on Thursday on this show to talk about the Sanctuary City Initiative. Now, this is, of course, a very pro-Sanctuary City Initiative guest, and that's the exact reason why I wanted to have her in. I have some thoughts and concerns, and it's kind of interesting as well that a lot of, whether it's the majority of the Ward 1, and I talk about Ward 1 because it's one of the more contested city council races, all the mayoral candidates have stated concerns with it as well. So it's been interesting to see even a majority of the Democratic candidates at a city level voice concerns about it. I think there's only one city council candidate that I can think of. Actually, there's two now on the Ward 1, in the Ward 1 race. I think it's Miguel Ortega and Sammy Hamed, who are vocal supporters of the Sanctuary City Initiative. But I mean, the debate that I've heard, and I'm going to get into more detail with Zaira, because I really want to know more, and I've started to look into it more, is there is a concern that if you are undocumented here, that you won't engage with the police at a community safety level if there's concern, and they believe that this is pushing but not breaking the law in terms of SB 1070. And then to Chuck's point, I hear on the other side that there's a perception concern, that there is a state level kind of retaliation concern, there's a branding concern. And so on this show, we're actually going to get into that a little bit. And we're going to start by having the leader of the Sanctuary Cities Initiative on Tuesday. I know that was a long response to Chuck, but I was excited to have that call and to be able to say in 2 days from now, we'll have a full-on conversation about that. Let's see. I think line three was ahead. Tony on line three, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind? Let's see. Do we still have Tony? Oh, no. I think we lost Tony. All right. I will be taking calls through the rest of the hour. If you have a chance to jump back on or jump in, I will get to your phone calls as quickly as possible. 790-2040. And along the way, there's a few things we're going to talk about. I want to get into this Wallet Hub 2019's best big cities to live in. I think we've got, is it Charles on line two? Charles, thanks for calling into our live line. What's on your mind? Yep. Do we have Charles?
Yes, sir. And one of the things first of all, thanks for keeping it interesting and for having diverse opinions on it. It does really make radio more listenable. In regards to your previous guest, the transportation director, she said something I found very disturbing, and that was that the autonomous cars are the future. Mm. My question is, how much force are they going to try and use to require people to ride in autonomous cars as opposed to drive their own? I find very disturbing. The idea that you can't drive your own car, you can't go where you want the car to go, or more importantly, if there's a decision, a bad decision that has to be made between hitting a post or hitting a person, which is the car going to make versus what you would have wanted the car to make? That's what I want to know.
Got it. Charles, are you seeing anything around the country, or are you reading anything that gives you that concern?
No, everything I'm reading gives me that concern, because the whole idea of an autonomous car is that the car is the authority. Whoever designed the software in the car is the authority on what decisions your car will make, not you. And that is a genuine tree root in the pipeline of freedom.
Got it. Charles, thanks for that clarification, and thanks for calling in. That's a really good point. I know that, and what will be interesting too is to see on the commercial side, we have semi-autonomous trucks that are now on the road. Charles, I thank you for bringing up that point. And very, very interesting. I haven't put a ton of thought into some of the more philosophical concerns behind autonomous vehicles. Let's get to Tony on line two. Tony, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Absolutely. Thank you for your wonderful program. So I just wanted to respond to Chuck with a quote from John F. Kennedy. There's nothing to fear but fear itself. And I don't really know what he's referring to when he says rapist and all that. I think that's a misconception. That's a dog whistle for people that are ignorant about the issue. I doubt seriously if we're going to allow rapists, we're going to say, hey, rapists, you can come on down here. No, they do some screening, and if they've committed offense or law is broken, then they're subject to the law. So that's where we're at with it. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony, for calling in. I appreciate it. Something I'm going to work on as well. Again, I was able to book the kind of lead at the People's Defense Initiative, which is also leading out on the Sanctuary Cities initiative to get the pro-Sanctuary City side of things. I'm also looking to book a guest that will talk about the maybe, I don't want to say like anti, or but definitely the con of what are some of the concerns, and what I tend to think, and this is my still educating myself opinion, is yes, I will say that I think Tony has a good point that often the criminal side can be a dog whistle, but the criminal side exists, and so I think the opportunity to either work with the federal or state officials, challenges to that from a Sanctuary City initiative, challenges in funding, challenges in collaboration around drug trafficking, those are also issues that I have heard on the con side of the initiative that I'll be looking forward to getting into. Right now, I'm collecting feedback, collecting educated guests to come in and talk about it. If you haven't already guessed, I take my time in providing my take. I'm in feedback collecting mode. So if I'm not answering you directly, that's why, as I'm collecting. And then when I come to my most informed conclusion, you'll know about it and I'll tell you on the air. But I try to. What's that quote? I'm trying to see if John can help me out. It's better to not talk and appear a fool than to open your mouth and leave no doubt. Something like that. So 10 hours, 40 hours a month on the air. It's a good practice to to leave people guessing if you're actually a fool or not, rather than to leave any doubt. Roberta online too. Thanks for bearing with me there. I appreciate your call. Call in on our live line. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling in regard to your last caller. If we make this a sanctuary city, we will not be able to check on the criminal past of people coming into the country.
Thanks, Roberta, for your call. I appreciate it. Yeah, I think that is something that I've heard as well, and I believe that to be true. That there, obviously that's the point of a sanctuary city, is that there's less digging in, at least before or during, when there's a public safety concern, immigrant status or the status of the individual becomes less of a concern along the way. Roberta, I thank you for your call, and even over the weekend started to dig into some of this stuff and read even as far back as January some of the city attorney's writing, some of PDI, and again, I'm collecting feedback and thoughts, and that means yours as well. I'm taking note of all of these things, and really my goal is to curate exactly what this last segment was about, and that is an opportunity to call in, provide what you know, provide your feedback, provide your thoughts, and we'll build. Again, we'll start, I think, getting into this issue more in detail here on the show with Zyra from PDI on Thursday at 11. So put that on your calendar. Let's head to a break. When we get back, we'll wrap up this hour. And then we'll get into our What If Hour at 11. I've got a few big things to talk with you about. Wallet Hub ranks Tucson as one of the best big cities to live in 2019. Why? But there's a little kernel of concern in there. We'll get to that too after the break. Don't go away. 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to the show. You know, last segment is why I do radio. We had callers from both sides of the aisle call in and this just popped up because it's a community issue that is a hot topic right now and cared about deeply from all. And that was the Sanctuary Cities Initiative, which, as I mentioned, if you just joined us, when I get this many calls about an issue, and I don't feel like I have enough of a handle on the topic to speak intelligently to it, your calls send me back down the rabbit hole to do more research and more thought work. I was joking with John that doing 40 hours of radio a month, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, sometimes you'd rather just keep your mouth shut and let people think you're a fool than to open your mouth and leave no doubt. I got that quote pretty close. We got pro, we got con about the issue, and I'm looking forward to getting started with more and further conversation about this by having the one of the leaders of the Sanctuary Cities Initiative in the studio with me on Thursday, and then we'll also be looking to have someone who can speak to some of the concerns about it in as a guest as well, and then I'll provide in the near future my own thoughts of just kind of what I'm seeing and reading and hearing. But my goal number one is to be a curator of exactly what happened in the last segment. This is your avenue, Tucson, to sound in and sound off and to talk about the things that matter to you, that matter to you the most. 790-2040 is your live line, front door key to that conversation, and I thank you. I didn't get to, after my conversation with Diana Alarcon, the Director of Transportation for the City of Tucson, in the first half of the hour. I didn't get to any of the things that I was planning to in this hour, but that's okay because we're going to have an even more full second hour. On Tuesdays, we do a What If Hour. We talk about some big ideas that could have an impact on Tucson's future. And I have three themes that I want to bat back and forth with you in Hour 2. Tucson Wallet Hub lists Tucson as one of 2019's best big cities to live in. I'm going to dive into that publication, let you know why that Tucson ranked that high, and then also a couple things of note that I think we should be thinking about as Tucsonans. Our status as a city that still struggles with crime and poverty and safety, even on this best of list, popped up in a strong way. So we're going to talk about that. Forbes talks about Tucson as an underdeveloped market that could become a tech hub. Their words. We'll talk about that in hour two. And then three key themes that will drive cities' strategies for job creation. It's a bit of a follow-up on my show yesterday where I talked about how 15 million jobs held by those 34 and under will likely either change or not exist or be automated away by 2030. And what does that mean for our local economy now? So I'll talk about three key themes that will drive cities' strategies for job creation, and that will take us through hour two. So Tucson, do not go away. We are going to get into it in the 11 o'clock hour here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Again, get those phones out, 790-2040, and we will talk about it in the 11 o'clock hour. Let me tee it up in about 15 seconds for you. Wallet Hub lists Tucson as one of the 2019's best big cities to live in. Did you catch it? I'm not just repeating the title over because I'm going crazy. I want you to catch something. 2019's best big cities to live in. Wallet Hub lists Tucson as a big city. Did you catch it? Tucson's a big city. Do we think we're a big city? Do we think like a big city? Does everybody else think of Tucson as a big city except us? I want to talk about that a little bit more on the other side of the break. Don't go away. News and updates at 11, and then I will see you in a few minutes. This has been the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser, as we talk about the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. See you on the other side. Don't go away.